Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate the present by voting? Will the clerk please take the roll?
The roll shows 31 members present.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Freeman is excusing the call of the House today, although he is present.
Will the clerk please note the presence of Representative Freeman? Will the members please rise for the invocation by Pastor Milton S. Hunt, Resurrection Lutheran Church. Representative Hurlburt.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent the prayer be spread on the journal.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the prayer will be spread on the journal. This brings us to certification of the journal. Will the clerk please certify the journal for the 116th legislative day?
I wish to certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 116th legislative day in accordance with the rules.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the journal for the 116th legislative day be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This brings us to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction? Messages from the Governor?
I have no messages from the Governor.
Messages from the Senate?
I have a message dated May 6th. The Senate has passed Committee Substitute for House Bill 524, Labor and Commerce, Small Loans effective date with the following amendment. Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 524, Labor and Commerce, same title, and transmitting same for consideration. I have a message dated May 6th stating that the Senate has passed the following bills and is transmitting them for consideration. Committee Substitute for Sponsor Substitute for Senate Bill 684, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Investment and Management of the Alaska Permanent Fund and to the Computation of the Income of the Fund Available for Distribution and Providing for an Effective Date.
Committee Substitute for Sponsor Substitute for Senate Bill 684 is referred to State Affairs Committee and Finance Committee.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 741, Finance, by the Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Child Support Enforcement and Providing for an Effective Date.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 741 is referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Those are all the messages from the Senate.
Are there other communications?
Yes. I have a letter dated May 6th inviting the Senate to attend a joint session with the House at 2 p.m. on Monday, May 10th, for the purpose of considering governor's appointments to the boards and commissions and other business that is may appropriately come before the joint body. I have a letter dated May 5th from John Katz, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, regarding the findings of the governor's task force on state of Alaska participation in Alaska natural gas transportation system financing. Copies of this letter are, I believe, are on all the members' desks.
Brings us to reports of standing committees. Are there standing committee reports?
Yes, I have a committee report from the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee has had Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 732, Finance, relating to mineral extraction from state land and providing for an effective date under consideration, and recommends that it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 732, Rules, same title. And a majority of the committee recommends that it do pass. Members signing do pass were Fuller, Chairman, O'Connell, and Phillips. Smith signed no recommendation. This bill has no further referral. The Resources Committee has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 794, Finance, relating to the management of state land for marine parks and game sanctuaries and providing for an effective date, under consideration, and recommends that it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 794, Resources, same title, and reports it back as follows. Sutcliffe, co-chairman, and Grusendorf signed no recommendation. Carney signed do pass. Fanning signed do not pass. This bill has no further referral. Those are all the reports of standing committees.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
I have no citations or resolutions.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of bills?
I have no bills.
Brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to bring up the reconsideration of Senate Bill 872.
The reconsideration of Senate Bill 872 has been brought up by Representative Rogers. Will the clerk please read the bill?
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 872 by the Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Health, Sanitation, and Sanitary Practices in the Seafood Processing Industry and Other Industries that Produce Food for Human Consumption and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Duncan.
May we have it at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, this is the quality safety portion of the salmon crisis package, and I would encourage the members to go ahead and send it on to the Senate.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 872, Finance, which is before us in third reading under reconsideration, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 31 yeas, 2 nays.
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 872, Finance, has passed the House under reconsideration. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on final passage of House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 872, Finance, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Brown. House, please stand at ease. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, there was a letter of intent with Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 872, and at this time, again, I move the adoption of the letter of intent that was passed out yesterday and ask unanimous consent.
That's the House Finance Committee letter of intent?
That's correct. It was initially a Senate letter of intent adopted, and if adopted, it would be the House letter of intent as well.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House Finance Committee letter of intent for Senate Bill 872 is adopted. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in recess to the call of the chair.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House stands in recess to the call of the chair. Apparently there was at least one announcement that needed to be made, and then we'll ask for another recess motion. Representative Cato.
Excuse me. There will be a House Transportation Committee meeting at 5 o'clock this afternoon taking up the Alaska Railroad, or Senate Bill number 212.
Are there other announcements, Representative Metcalf?
Mr. Speaker, there will be a very brief meeting of the State Affairs Committee, and it will take place immediately following when we break for lunch.
We may be breaking for lunch right now, Representative Metcalf. So you want to set a time?
It'll be taken up in about 5 minutes or as soon as we get out of here.
In 5 minutes, the State Affairs meeting. Representative Brown?
Speaker, under announcements, I'd just like to point out that it'll be possible on the weekend for people to get a chance to win any one of the following various things. A day sailing for two with Representative Terry Gardner, a hair appointment with Ramona Barnes hairdresser, racquetball lesson with Jim Duncan, dinner with Steve Cooper. You'll be able to bid on Faye Freeman's homemade turnovers, a trip to Fantasy Island with Senator Ed Dankworth, fresh frozen Kodiak scallops, compliments of Fred Jaroff, a dinner concert, classics to jazz, and your first music lesson from Representative Fred Brown, a copy of the Coalition Game Plan, complete book, Representative Bob Bettisworth's hair comb, and a pot of Bill Ray's spaghetti and quite a few other nice items at the Mother's Day bash thrown by the Democratic Legislative Committee at Marcello's on Sunday.
Sounds good. Are there any other announcements? Representative Abood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. They caught four kings off the bread line.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I note that the chairman of the House Finance Subcommittee on the Bond Issues is not present. He had last night said that there would be an attempt for that subcommittee to meet either late today or early tomorrow, and I'm sure that will be posted.
Thank you, Representative Rogers. Yes, that is correct. Representative Hofford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to remind the members that there is a meeting at 4 o'clock of the Oil and Gas Committee on the TAPS case. At this time, I move and ask to be announced. You sure? Okay, apparently we do have the governor's
4 o'clock meeting on the TAPS settlement, you say?
The TAPS settlement proposal.
At 4 o'clock in the governor's conference room. Is there a loan committee meeting today? On the Representative Rogers,
there's a loan committee meeting at noon.
Noon and again later in the afternoon. Yeah.
Thank you. Unless there are further announcements, Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess to the call of the chair.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House stands in recess to the call of the chair. In order to establish a quorum, will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Will the clerk please take the roll?
The roll shows 31 members present.
Before we consider the daily calendar, without objection, I'd like to move back up the daily order of business to deal with some messages from the Senate, and then some committee reports and a citation. Without objection, will you please read any messages from the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, the Senate concurred in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill No. 759, Resources Amended. Thus, committee substitute for Senate Bill No. 759, as amended by the House, Size of Trapping Cabins, passed the Senate. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill 524, Labor and Commerce, regarding small loans, effective date, with the following amendment. Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 524, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, and transmitting same for consideration. The Senate approved the following citations. They're transmitted for consideration. Honoring Fairbanks, Sweet Adelines, by Senators Fahrenkamp, Bennett, and Parr. Honoring Don McKinnon, by Senators Ray and Gilman, and Representatives Duncan and Miller. Mr. Speaker, the Senate failed to concur in the House amendments to Senate Bill No. 768, Residential Loans Administered by Regional Native Housing Authorities, an effective date, namely House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill No. 768, Resources, as amended by the House, providing for fishery product loan guarantees, an effective date, and respectfully request the House to recede from its amendments. In the event the House fails to recede, the President appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with a like committee from the House to consider the bills. Senator Mulcahy, Chairman, Senator Dankworth, and Senator Curtula.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House recede from our amendments to Senate Bill 768 and ask the members to vote no.
Representative Brown.
I also ask the members to vote no.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House recede from its amendments to Senate Bill 768? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows no yeas, 31 nays.
The House has failed to recede from its amendments to Senate Bill 768. This time I will appoint a conference committee consisting of Representative Hofford, Chairman, Representative Sutcliffe, and Representative Gardner. Are there further messages from the Senate?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Other communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees?
The State Affairs Committee has had committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 684, Finance Amended, an act relating to the investment and management of the Alaska Permanent Fund and to the computation of the income of the fund available for distribution and providing for an effective date. The committee recommends replace with House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 684, Finance Amended, with the same title, and reports it back as follows. Metcalf chairman and Abood signed due pass. Miller, Brown, and Fanning had no recommendation. Those are all the committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
No citations, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of bills?
No bills.
This brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the bills on today's calendar be held over one legislative day for tomorrow's calendar.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the reconsiderations available today, which have not been brought up, be held over for one legislative day.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This brings us to unfinished business. Is there unfinished business to come before the body? House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? We're down to unfinished business. Representative Abood, under unfinished business.
May we revert to introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, we'll revert to introduction of guests. Representative Abood.
In Gallery A, a good friend of mine and a constituent, Assemblyman Don Smith, who is also a former legislator of this House. Don Smith, Gallery A.
Don, as a former member of this body, you're welcome to the privilege of the floor if you'd like to make a few sage comments. Thank you. Representative Halford, under unfinished business.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Anderson and Representative Cuddy be excused April 8th through plain time April 10th. May.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the members are excused on the dates and times requested. Other unfinished business? Announcements? Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to re-announce what I announced this morning and change it, and that is there'll be a transportation committee on SB 212, not at 5 o'clock this afternoon, but at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Thank you.
The transportation committee meeting has been rescheduled until 8:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. Representative Adams. That's a TAPS meeting, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, there'll be a subcommittee, a finance subcommittee on bonds meeting tomorrow, which all members are invited to. It'll be primarily on the corrections bonds at 3 o'clock in the House Finance Room or after House Finance gets out if it's later than 3 o'clock, but probably around 3 o'clock tomorrow. We're going to try to go into a little more depth on the corrections bonds. We did take about 4 hours of testimony last night on all the bonds and had, I think, real good public hearing on that, but the corrections one needs a little more work, so we're going to be on that tomorrow too.
Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, under announcements, I'd like to announce that I'm wearing this green carnation today, Mr. Speaker, in memory of that great Irish patriot, Bobby Sands, who died in a British prison, starved to death just 1 year ago this week. Thank you.
Further announcements? Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, the Conference Committee on Interstate Banking will be meeting at 2:45 today in Senate Finance.
Representative O'Connell. Will the House please stand at ease? We're under announcements. I'd request that members hang on to their calendar packets since we're holding it over one legislative day. Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted everyone to know that Doc forgot to announce who paid for the carnation, and that was paid for by the Irish Guerrilla Association of Alaska.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, the Conference Committee on Loans will meet at 3 o'clock in the Senate Finance Room.
Conference Committee on the loan package. Representative Brown, under announcements. Are there further announcements? Special orders. Representative Brown.
Speaker, I'd like to privilege the floor to talk about problems in secrecy in government.
You have the floor, Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, to some extent, even those who criticize what goes on sometimes can get a little bit tied up in the process themselves and some of the things they're criticizing. It's too easy to happen in a political situation or in a volatile situation. It bothered me a couple of days ago, or I think yesterday, when I was asked by a member of the press what was going on with regard to discussions between my caucus and your caucus and the Senate and the governor. And members of my caucus have been rather concerned about this. We are concerned about the extent to which there's not a conference committee on the budget. The budget's been written in secret, and it's a very difficult problem. And there's been some other statements that we have made on this floor with regard to that same kind of thing. And although we've heard these jokes that are made occasionally in speeches under special orders about consistency and what H.L. Mencken may have said about it, at the same time, we have decided that we're going to release to the press the proposal, the counter-proposal that we offered to people on the in the Senate and in your caucus, and that we've discussed some points of with people on the third floor. Up until about 1970, I believe, the Conference Committee on the Budget was done in secret. A member of, I think it was either 70 or 72, it was a member of our caucus who was the first chairman of a free conference committee on the budget that was open. All of the old veterans in the legislature at that time said the world was going to come to an end if that door was opened. He opened the door and nobody closed it, and they've been open ever since up until this year. Mr. Speaker, one of the things that we asked of you and of the Senate and of others is that the Conference Committee on the Budget be open. Also, we do realize it takes two to tango. Your caucus might agree, for instance, but if the Senate doesn't agree, well, it's not open. I think if we make our position that we were taking public, it shows that we really are interested in public government. We have a quite defensible position. Everybody's been saying we're only interested in money or something. We have a list of bills we're concerned about and issues that we're concerned about that affect the people of Alaska. And of course, with regard to matters affecting the capital budget, particularly when you have members from single-member districts, from rural districts that do not have the economic base, say, that Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau or Ketchikan have, that then that's as substantive and as real a concern as anything else, and we are concerned about that too. We're concerned about opening the process. We're concerned about having bills we're concerned about and issues we're concerned about addressed, and we're concerned that if there's going to be a capital budget, that certain districts are not completely read out with regard to many considerations simply because somebody may or may not be in the minority in one house or the other. And we're concerned about the way the bonds are put together, and we're concerned about the way this process continues, whether it's going to be in public or not in public. For that reason, Mr. Speaker, we're going to make copies of exactly the same document that I provided to you about a day and a half ago to the press, the same document that I also provided to the President of the Senate that I've discussed with the Governor's office.
You have the floor. Use your mic, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And also, we'd like to also show the public by having hearings, as we did last night regarding bonds. And this afternoon, you'll have one regarding correctional facilities. The coalition stands ready, and also the House Finance Committee stands ready to have a free conference on a budget. But we need to have a second party to take care of this matter. We also await for the Senate to send over the budget so we can have that appointment made. And we do keep the minority leader's concern as far as open process. We also have those same concerns, and we will have open door meetings on the budget when that time comes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I request the privilege of the floor to speak on another subject, that being assistance for the poor.
You have the floor, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I've been on this floor a number of times this year and last year criticizing particularly this year, criticizing this body for its indifference to the poor and to the disadvantaged and the elderly in the state of Alaska. Many of those concerns I continue to have about the commitment of this body. But today I want to speak about the commitment of the administration to those same people, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very disappointed with their commitment. Mr. Speaker, it appears to me that there has been a conscious decision of some sort made by the administration, the executive branch of this state. People in the disadvantaged and the sick in this state. Let me give you some examples. And these are things that are going on very recently, Mr. Speaker, that maybe some of you aren't aware of. First of all, Mr. Speaker, not more than about a week or a week and a half ago, the administration, with essentially no warning to this body, proposed a set of regulations which would cause drastic cutbacks in the amount of assistance available and the method by which that assistance is made available in the Medicaid program. I won't go into a lot of detail with you, but there are many, many thousands of people in this state that receive the assistance of Medicaid because they are poor and they have a health problem. Mr. Speaker, again, without warning and without having a final answer from us about what budget level would be provided, the Department of Health and Social Services is proposing major cutbacks in the Medicaid program. Mr. Speaker, in addition to that, approximately the same time, this is about a week and a half or so ago now, the Department of Health and Social Services adopted emergency regulations which drastically cut back the general relief medical program. Now, the Medicaid program is for people that qualify as a joint federal-state program. And then for the people that fall through the cracks, that are still needy and need medical care but don't qualify for that program, there's a state program, the general relief medical program. Mr. Speaker, they would propose drastic cutbacks in that program, once again with no warning to this body and no effort to achieve any sort of appropriation from this body to keep that program going. Mr. Speaker, according to the department, those cutbacks would terminate approximately 1,500 people in this state from the General Relief Medical Program. Well, that's not all, Mr. Speaker. In addition to that, many of us are aware of the problem with the Bureau of Indian Affairs Program for Alaska Natives, the General Assistance Program. I have on this floor criticized this body for its failure to act, its failure to take decisive action. In fact, the people that used to be eligible for the General Assistance Program have now been off of that program for over a month, with no assistance forthcoming from this body, but most importantly, and the point I want to make today, Mr. Speaker, with absolutely no effort by the administration to try to take care of those people. How many people is that? Mr. Speaker, the estimated average monthly caseload is 3,000 households. That's approximately 8,000 to 10,000 people a month that used to use that program, and they've been cut off of that program. And this administration, Mr. Speaker, has made no effort whatsoever to do anything about that situation. My final example, Mr. Speaker, is one that particularly galls me. There was legislation that passed this body a couple of weeks ago, House Bill 357, which was basically a piece of legislation that was a cleanup legislation of the Adult Public Assistance Program. It's a cash payment program, again, for the aged, disabled, and blind who were in need of cash assistance. Mr. Speaker, the bill we passed was a cleanup bill. After that bill passed the House of Representatives, it's now sitting in the other body, the administration came in and asked and demanded, in fact, amendments to that legislation which would result in the termination of that assistance to over 1,000 people, once again with absolutely no warning to this body or to the other body. Mr. Speaker, I see that as a pattern. Those four examples are a pattern that this administration is indifferent to the needs of the poor people of Alaska. Now, to put it in context, I want to compare for you the position that administration is taking on those programs and the position the administration is taking on things like the Permanent Fund Dividend Program. Now, the argument for the Permanent Fund Dividend Program is that we have so much excess revenue that we want to pass it out to the people of this state. Well, I don't know how you feel about that, but I think that is the ultimate in hypocrisy. For the administration of this state to say, we're going to stay in session here until we pass out hundreds of millions of dollars to the non-needy people of this state. At the same time, we're cutting off 3,000 people in the General Assistance Program, 1,500 people in the General Relief Medical Program, and over 1,000 people in the Adult Public Assistance Program. Now, if that isn't bad enough, Mr. Speaker, The administration is also insisting, before we go home, that we adopt a so-called spending limit. Well, first of all, it's not a spending limit. It's an allocation bill. It allocates revenues of the state of Alaska, and it makes sure that those revenues are going to fund capital projects. Once again, I don't know how you feel about capital projects and how high a priority they are, but that spending allocation plan, which we have to deal with, apparently, before we're going to be allowed to go home by the administration, that program is, in fact, going to funnel money into capital projects and away from the operating budget. Mr. Speaker, the poor people of Alaska are the ones who receive the services and the cash and the medical care in the operating budget of this state. I think it is the ultimate in hypocrisy for the administration of this state to enter into a conscious effort to reduce the number of poor people on public assistance programs, and they're still needy. They're just cutting them off because they say we don't have enough money. And at the same time, insisting we spend hundreds of millions of dollars for the non-needy people of this state. I'm disappointed in that attitude, Mr. Speaker, and I just wanted to bring to your attention what's been happening in the last couple of weeks of this session by the administration, efforts by that administration for wholesale reductions in public assistance. Thank you.
Representative Makins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the privilege of the floor under special orders to speak about, sanity defense.
You have the floor, Representative Meekins.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, this body has been dealing with the question of whether to change or modify the ability to plead not guilty by reason of insanity, the insanity defense, for most of this session. I know particularly the Judiciary Chairman on the House side has worked very hard on legislation that would change the insanity defense to make it so that it at least would have to be an affirmative defense. That is, the burden of the proof would be upon the defense as opposed to on the prosecution in regards to that defense. And I think that definitely is an improvement. I think the Judiciary Chairman on the other side has also been interested in the question, and the committees on both sides have worked on it. And we do have a bill addressing it in the House Rules Committee, a Senate bill. I myself have been interested in the question for about 2.5 years since I participated in a seminar on it in an area down in California, and was convinced to change my opinion on the insanity defense, and decided then that probably it was being abused and it was a very dangerous kind of thing to have. At that moment, two years ago, every state and nation allowed the defense of innocent by reason of insanity, although they had different definitions of it. Just recently, about a month and a half ago, one state in the union changed that. And now you do not have in the state of Iowa the ability to declare innocence by reason of insanity. Last night the question was again brought up on a national level by a national documentary, one of the major television companies, in regards to the assailant of the attempted assassination of President Reagan and Mr. Hinckley, who is declaring innocence by reason of insanity, and that has again raised the question. There was a very compelling documentary which. The point of which was that perhaps we should review and change our laws in regards to insanity defense. And then this morning, find that the suspect in the teen murders in Anchorage that has been apprehended has a history that is on this same type of thing, that at least the person who has been apprehended was charged with a very brutal murder of a person in 1973 and was found innocent by reason of insanity and was subsequently not put in jail but placed in Alaska Psychiatric Institute, and for the last several years or at least a year has been on as an outpatient of API and therefore had at least the ability to be involved in these very horrible murders. I think it brings up the question. I think it's important that we don't react in an emotional way or an hysterical way, in a knee-jerk reaction, but I do think it provides a tremendous opportunity. This tragedy in Anchorage provides us with the focus of our attention on the question of should we allow people to be declared innocent by reason of insanity. And I believe that we shouldn't allow that. The current situation that if a person is guilty but is very likely to be insane, and it's some of the worst crimes that we see in this state and others are committed by people who are insane. And yet the jury deliberating has the question of either to find that person insane and raise the potential that some administrator or some psychiatric official can declare that person sane in a year and a half or 2 years or some number of years down the road and put that person back out on the streets even though he's committed some horrible crime. They've got that option. If they declare the truth and say this person's insane, it's likely that he can be back out on the streets and society's not protected and justice, I don't believe, is served. On the other hand, they can pretend that he is sane and say, no, we believe this person is sane, and therefore commit this person who should have treatment and who is insane, mentally disturbed, put him in our jails. And it's not really right either that a person who's mentally ill be sent to our jails, but at least that's the way that they protect society from potential further acts of that person. So it's not satisfactory at all. I think it endangers our society tremendously, and it does not serve the case of justice. And I'm having drafted, with the concurrence and help of many of the members of this body, an amendment that would go further even than we did in the Judiciary Committee, and I believe it is consistent with the intent of the Judiciary Chairman and some of the members of the committee that I've spoken with in any case, that we try to go even further than we did in terms of modifying the insanity defense and to eliminate it as one other state in the Union has. If the amendment were to be adopted, in cases such as this, if the person were insane and guilty, that's what the jury could find, guilty and insane. And the person would then go to a mental institution. If he were never cured, in anybody's view, he would stay in that mental institution. If he were cured, if he were to be judged sane at some time, he would go to jail and spend whatever the rest of the sentence might be. If it were life in prison, he'd spend the rest of his life in jail. If it were 20 years and he'd spent 5 in the institute, he'd spend the remainder or 15 years in jail. I think that is a much better approach. I think that we've gone too far in our attempt to be progressive and to treat the mentally disturbed. I think there should be more accountability, and I think that the question needs to be raised, and this is an appropriate time for it. And I will be making an attempt with other members of this body to try to get that amendment on that Senate bill in the House Rules Committee.
Representative Martin.
Yes, sir. Mr. Speaker, may I have the floor for a few moments to answer the emotional presentation given by the gentleman downtown Anchorage pertaining to Medicare?
Yeah, the floor, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The gentleman first said that without warning, certain things were done in new regulations, and so were certainly suddenly promulgated. I think that anyone that really cares, sir, would know, as I have seen over the past 4 years, that the administration has taken its responsibility for providing for those people who really need care very seriously. However, there's also the counterpoint. How many thousands of people have misused the system? It wasn't really the administration that found this out. It was the federal government that found this out. For instance, just last year alone, over $7 million at a minimum was misused in people claiming that they had a need. And only because of the looseness of our policies in this state and because of the very generous formula that we use in this state, we became too laxed. And so that we were encouraging people to misuse the system. I don't know if the gentleman from downtown is ever going down to the Gamble Street department, sir, but I have a number of times every summer. I make it a habit to go down there for 2 or 3 days and sit around and see the tremendous pressure that the staff is under trying to give out coupons by the thousands to people who demand them. And, you know, if they don't get it right away, you'd be surprised at some of the shows some of those people put on. I'm going to talk to my legislator. I want to talk to this guy. I'll have you in court. And the threats are just unbelievable. If I worked there one day, I'd probably go out of my mind. But those people are very dedicated and try to do what's right. The legislation that is before the regulation that have just passed now have not suddenly been done. They have been done under good guidelines. They've been done under experience. There are sincere, dedicated people who are there who want to help people who truly need to be helped. But they do not want the constant criticism that had been justified in the past of abuse and misuse. If you go by the nearby drugstore in this gentleman's district, all he has to do is go down to the drugstore on 10th and Gamble. And he would see the hundreds of people coming in every day misusing coupons for anything and everything you could ever imagine that the poor and sick need. Now, they are trying to do a good job. I don't think it's fair for him, without having to spend hours at either of those places or with the administration or with the health official over at DSS department to criticize him publicly unless he knows what's going on.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we revert to introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, we'll revert to introduction of guests. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, a good friend of yours and mine, Mr. Gail Kincaid, would you join with me in welcoming him to Juneau?
Representative O'Connell, did you wish the floor? Representative Hogan. Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we revert momentarily to announcements of committee meetings, please?
Without objection, we'll revert to announcements. Representative O'Connell.
Thank you. Tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, there will be a very brief meeting of the Committee of Regional Affairs Committee to take up Senate Bill 252, an act relating to grants for water and supply, sewage, and solid waste facilities.
Are there further special orders? Representative Malone, under special orders.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under special orders, I'd like the floor to speak on who owns Alaska.
You have the floor, Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe probably most members here had an opportunity to review the article in the recent, I believe it was Fairbanks Daily News, Miner, on the closing of the State Pipeline Coordinator's Office and the comments that Mr. Charles Belke had on the Alaska Natural Gas Transportation System Project. Speaker, Mr. Belke was a very knowledgeable, interested, and dedicated person, pointed out that in the last 6 years, the project's schedule had slipped 9, and at that rate that the project would never catch up with the calendar. Mr. Speaker, one of the difficulties that we've faced, and I think due to our own outlook in the development of the natural gas on the North Slope, is that other people have been proposing what is to be done. The federal government, consortium of gas companies, oil companies, etc., people from other nations propose what should be done. Speaker, I think that the natural resources of Alaska that were granted to the people in the Statehood Act belong to the people of Alaska. Mr. Speaker, I believe it's our responsibility as the major public policy-making branch of government, our responsibility here in the legislature, to face up to the fact that the gas pipeline construction, at a minimum, is very much delayed, and that we ought to take the opportunity to examine what are the alternatives. Speaker, I believe members of this body are familiar with the fact that I have proposed in the past that we study alternatives to the proposed gas line that was decision was made by the federal government on the grounds that the economics of that made it very unlikely that the proposal could go forward. Mr. Speaker, the recent closure of the State Gas Pipeline Coordinator's Office, I think, makes it clear that we really do need to take action now in looking at some alternatives. I don't know what all the alternatives include. Some that have been mentioned to me and that I have looked into over the past several years include other uses for the gas on the North Slope, such as conversion to methanol for shipment through the present line, electric generation on the slope for supply of the rest of the state, other pipeline proposals. Mr. Speaker, there is legislation that currently resting in the Special Gas Pipeline Committee to provide funding for a study of alternatives to the natural gas transportation system. Mr. Speaker, I think it's time the legislature faced reality and funded this year a study of what are the possible alternatives to the gas line, or including the alternative of the gas line itself. But, Mr. Speaker, we're letting other people make decisions that aren't always in our advantage as to what's going to happen to us and to our resources. Speaker, I believe that the people of Alaska own those resources, and as elected officials representing those people, it's time for this legislature to start dealing with the question in our own interest, and I would urge the Special Gas Pipeline Committee to soon take action on House Bill 408 or an equivalent measure so that the development of the gas reserves on the slope can go forward and be a benefit of the people of Alaska.
Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, could I speak a moment about the slavering wolves on the Potomac?
You have the floor, Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, I've written a number of articles in the past, and I've made a few predictions about some of the things that I saw in the future, and I think that Unfortunately for Alaska, a prediction and warning that I've written about on several occasions in the past appears to be on the verge of becoming an actuality. I've warned that we are on a collision course with the Eastern Congressman and those slavering wolves on the Potomac. Unfortunately for us, we're faced with the fact that there are more of them than there are of us, Mr. Speaker. They are going to be taking millions from our future income if we continue, Mr. Speaker, to ignore the signs of the times. Recently, Mr. Speaker, and I think some of the papers are still on your desk today, a front page article verified these predictions that we would lose hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues under a congressional plan to limit the state severance taxes on all gas and coal. The plan included a 30% tax on domestically produced oil, a tax by the federal government, Mr. Speaker, on a sovereign state. One of the leaders in this move, Mr. Speaker, is a congressman from Michigan, the automobile capital. Last year, Mr. Speaker, I had the audacity to investigate the need to protect Alaska's non-renewable resource revenues by aiding Chrysler through a potential $400 million loan, a loan protected by $600 million in collateral and a proposed factory in the state of Alaska. The theory was to keep their welfare cases in Michigan and off our unemployment rolls, possibly reducing the blue-eyed Arab concept that they had of Alaskans. It now appears, Mr. Speaker, that concept could very well have reduced their reasons to attempt to grab by congressional action better than $880 million to $1.12 billion of this state's annual income. Mr. Speaker, I've cried wolf before, and nobody listened. Now we've got a whole pack slavering at our door, Mr. Speaker. This legislature, while we're considering our budgets and our income, should take some action to strengthen our meat house doors before they break it in and take it all. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor to speak on shares.
You have the floor, Representative Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't wish to belabor the body here. What looks like appears to be happening here is the trend or a drift towards the a limited entry in the halibut fisheries, and with that, the potential of the limited entry in this particular fisheries is accompanying a proposal that would base the allocation of the particular fisheries on a share system. Although that is just simply a proposal at this time, the fear is beginning to set in among various fishermen throughout the state, and particularly in my community, Mr. Speaker, and they have asked me to share with you information that they have provided, and rather than send the information down on an individual basis due to the possibility of an adjournment in the near future, they have sent this information down in a package, of which I have taken the liberty, Mr. Speaker, to distribute to the members through your mailboxes the envelopes such as this with my name on there from Representative Zaroff. The information there that this group in Kodiak, which calls themselves the Alaskans Opposed to Fishery Shares, the information that they have gathered, and I would ask the body to review this material, and I myself will be in the process of reviewing it, and hopefully if there are questions that arise, we can discuss them. But it is a concern that they have there that the share system may not be the best alternative to use in his approach this time. But I would ask the body to review this objectively and go forward with an open mind. Although it does not have any bearing on the state as to what type of program will be set up, the halibut fisheries is basically an international fisheries controlled by the federal government this time, and these fishermen here feel that they are not having a voice in the say of what is going to evolve out of the potential limited entry in the halibut fisheries, and this is one method in which they're using to voice their concerns. Thank you.
Representative Abood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to clear up something that I said the other day on the floor of the House regarding king salmon fishing. I've been brought to my attention, I believe, it possibly by the Piccolo player from Fairbanks and the Dairy Queen operator and owner out of Kenai, that I caught 4 king salmon. I didn't. I never said it was me. Fish and Game, I understand, want to talk to me also. But for the few that are here at the moment, and I thank you for waiting for this, I didn't catch them. I heard that somebody did, and it wasn't 5. I didn't catch them. Somebody caught them on the bread line. I want to clear it up. I'd be appreciated if you'd support me in my statements in the future, and thank you very much.
Are there further special orders? Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House stands adjourned until 11 a.m. tomorrow morning.